Hello and welcome to the Lifetime Athlete Podcast. I'm your host, John Zombro, and today is episode number 224. I really appreciate you guys for being a member of this community, this audience. What we're trying to do at the Lifetime Athlete is maximize performance through the lifespan in all aspects, both at work and our relationships, but especially in our fitness, our athletics, our health. And wrapping that up into longevity or maximizing the health span that we should enjoy and which everyone so richly deserves. So all of these things that we're doing wrap around those coaching services that I provide, whether that's one-on-one or in group setting like in our training tribe. So the training tribe, as many of you know, or T2, is an online group training and coaching platform where members receive programming, workouts of the week, every week, and so they follow an annual training plan or a periodized system which breaks the year into five blocks, and we balance our efforts among the five capacities of human performance, which are strength, speed, power, endurance, and agility. We also have online meetings and forums and great interaction, and it's great fun. And one of the things that happens is sometimes I get asked questions. So this actually relates, today's episode is a mailbag episode of sorts because it relates to questions which I've recently received from Training Tribe members. Now, if you are a Training Tribe member and you're listening, hey, you're awesome, by the way, but also you'll kind of recognize the theme of some of this because we've been working on the big three or the major compound lifts, which we have in training and exercise or strength and conditioning known as the bench press, squat, and deadlift, and that's what makes up a powerlifting competition. Well, we're using those in our way in the training tribe. You know, as we go into finishing up the first of 3 months of our strength training or dedicated strength training block here in the winter / early spring. So, first of all, I think without underrepresenting anyone in the tribe, I believe we would all consider ourselves, you know, average everyday people trying to do good things, big things, but none of us are really competitive power lifters. Now, that being said, there's nothing wrong with powerlifting. It is indeed a sport, and it's there for, you know, anyone who is inclined to pursue those maximum lifts. And there's kind of a nomenclature issue when we talk about powerlifting, because by definition, power is a little bit different than pure strength or absolute force. And so maybe you could call these things strength lifting instead of power lifting because it doesn't matter how slowly things move necessarily, it's just how heavy they will be. And that's how the competition is scored, the total that one accumulates in, again, those three disciplines of squat, bench press, and deadlift. Now, getting into this a bit further, what I try to do in my work is limit the use of the words always and never, or perhaps not even use those. And this is especially true when you start thinking about exercise selection for an individual, what's appropriate, what's not, what is our goal, and really all that is situation or context dependent. So this might be a KISS opportunity for me, keep it simple, silly boy, John, or maybe if I come up with one on the spot here, a kinetic improvement solution system, K-I-S-S, KISS. Oh, or rock and roll over. Okay, don't you just want to rock and roll all night and party every day? Okay, get back to this. So in talking about these lifts, one of the first things that tribe members are going to recognize, and again, this is where some of my interactions have come from, is we're using variations of the bench press, the squat, and the deadlift in this month's training split. So the training split that we're using is what we're going to call a push legs pull times two affair. And so in other words, there's a push workout, there is a leg dominated workout, and then there is a pulling dominated workout. And that might be what we call ABC, and that would be Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then it's repeated Thursday, Friday, Saturday, with Sunday off or an optional seventh day off in the week. And some members even like to do additional training, whether that's aerobic or mobility or recreational sports, you name it. But that's kind of what we're doing, is how we're utilizing the split. And so if you've happened to catch any of the Training Tribe videos that have been out this month, you'll notice that we have those major movement patterns in there. Now, we're a little bit flexible in how we administer things in the tribe because everyone utilizes a different facility. Most of us have home gyms that we're using, and so some folks will have dumbbells but not barbells, or vice versa, or kettlebells, or maybe a minimal amount of those things, but a sandbag or a bunch of tubing, and even a broomstick or a pipe. And there are ways to get these things done. It's always about hashtag create the win. But also, some people use commercial gyms as well, and so you have many more options, including machines, all of which are kind of fine for what we're doing. But we're actually, this month, breaking things down. So we're doing the bench press, kind of, you know, fairly standard flat bench press. Most people are using dumbbells. I'm going to get back to that in a minute. With our squat pattern, we're using a heels elevated, either on board or ramp, goblet squat, preferably with kettlebell if one has it, but other items will work. And then also we're doing a deadlift. And again, there's variance there because some people have straight bars, some have trapper hex bars, and then others have, again, dumbbells or even buckets filled with sand, water, gravel, you name it. There's always a way. Hashtag there's always a way. Hashtag find the win. I'm on fire. Coffee's kicked in. Okay, so getting back right to the bench press. We were in our masterclass meeting this past weekend, and as we're going through, we're refining movement in the masterclass, we're getting a workout, I'm watching people on the screen, we're kind of picking out things. Oh, try this with this pattern. How's that feel? Is it better or worse? You know, let's see how it looks, so forth. So on. Well, one of the things when we were working on the bench press was one of our members said, gosh, you know, when I do that, I get some clunky, clicky, catchy sensations in my shoulders, and it's not pleasant. And I said, well, let's break that down. So we started to work on refining the movement in how we're doing the bench press, at least right now in the Training Tribe. So if I kind of come full circle and say, well, you know, in powerlifting, one of the things that a powerlifter is going to do is use a very extended position, because that's going to do several things. It's going to allow for more compressive power output, and also it's going to shorten the bar path. So you'll see a powerlifter in competition, feet are on the floor, possibly even slid back under a tad, big arch in the back, and then, you know, rib cage really sticking up high. So that's classic, and that's typical for the sport. But for most of us, we can work that horizontal push pattern a bit more effectively by maintaining the stack. And so the horizontal stack when you're on the bench press would be that you have alignment in the rib cage and pelvis. And, you know, everything's a cylinder there as opposed to a banana. So in doing that, what we're having our group members do is either put their heels up on the bench or even take the legs up into the air so hips and knees are at 90 degrees, shins are a tabletop, and that enables a good stack. And it actually allows for a bit more isolation into the musculature of the upper body, so you can make a lightweight feel heavier if you have limitations in your home gym. But also it's re-ingraining or repeating or reinforcing, that's a word I wanted, to help us with these movement capacities that we want, or it's reinforcing that. So long-winded, stumbled there a bit. So anyway, we looked at that. Then we started talking about, okay, how do you coordinate respiration or breathing? I think everybody knows it's really simple with the bench press. You know, you're going to inhale down, hold bottom, exhale up. There's some variation in that depending on how heavy the weight is and so forth. But the big thing that I tried to help those guys work on was, first of all, shoulder blade movement. So that's the scapula. And the scapula moves on the rib cage. Well, it makes up approximately one-third of the arm motion that we get out of our arms when we're moving our arms in space. Two-thirds of it are happening at the ball and saucer joint, known as the glenohumeral joint. That's in, you know, basically your shoulder proper. And then when you think of the shoulder girdle, that motion that occurs with the shoulder blade on the rib cage, and even to a small extent, how the clavicle or collarbone is moving as well at its articulations. So I said, let's think about that. And so sometimes on a bench press, especially if you're on a wider bench and it doesn't have much padding, you can actually get a trapping or a fixation of the shoulder blade. So you're not getting the full movement capacity or potential out of the girdle as you could. That's going to lead to more grinding and shearing and stress through the motion cycle at the glenohumeral joint. So we don't want that. So just encourage everyone to feel like they were moving their shoulder girdle appropriately, and that would be to let it come into retraction or pinching it kind of together towards the spine and down a tad as the arms are descending. And then when you're pressing up and exhaling, you're going to let those shoulders, shoulder blades abduct and protract. So yeah, we got that. Then people said, oh gosh, I'm getting less noise. It's feeling better. I've got more strength. Okay, good. Let's keep going. So then I said, okay, now let's think about Mike Tyson or Floyd Mayweather or Bruce Lee. If they're going to throw a punch, you know, there's the famous Tyson quote, everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the mouth. No one would sign up to ask for getting punched by any of those guys. But when those guys throw a punch, you can kind of picture how it all works. And so obviously there's loading of the whole body, retracting backwards, and the weight goes kind of, you know, outside and back. And then as they move forward, the weight will shift forward. Usually it's to the opposite foot. And now, you know, we're seeing that as far as how gait patterns load. But when you're in the bench press, we're really just saying, okay, well, how's that extrapolate out? And it's this rotational thing. And so you wind into an externally rotated position as you are coming into the start of the press or punch, if you will. But then there's a slight corkscrewing inward and also a motion towards midline when the punch is thrown. So you see people throw a punch all the time. That's the pattern that they use, because that not only harnesses the most power, it's the natural course of movement of the joints. It's driven by how those bones fit together and the articular congruency of them, if you like that term. So we start saying, okay, well, you want to emulate that punching process. And it's really easy to do if you're using dumbbells or kettlebells, because the arm has more freedom of motion. Same's true if you're, you know, upright using a cable stack or even tubing. On a machine or with a barbell, it's a bit more fixed, although you can still have some movement there. You know, the hands aren't going to actually change, but you can get that movement to happen through the rest of the limb and, A, make it safe and effective, but also get that click reduction or click elimination and more power. So that's kind of how that worked. There was one other case that I worked with recently where, just because of anatomy and the bench that the individual had available, they just couldn't get freedom of the scapula. So we said, okay, let's decrease the contact area on the body. And so luckily, this person had a half round foam roller. So you typically picture the standard foam roller, which is 6 inches and 36 inches long. Well, a half is one which is sawn in half longitudinally. And sometimes, you know, you'll pick these up, $15, $20, maybe, various places. And people get them sometimes because it's nice to lay on and, you know, use for various stretching or mobilizing positions, more so than, say, trying to roll on it, because it won't roll. But the benefit of that, because it won't roll, is it's pretty stable. It's not going anywhere. So you can do a bench press on that, whether you set it up on the floor as a floor press or on the bench itself, so you can get a tiny bit more range of motion. And you typically don't get much contact at the shoulder blades, so you can move those things a bit more freely. Yet another way to make a lighter weight feel heavier, be more effective. So that's kind of some tips I think I'd want to offer up regarding the bench press. Again, there's no judgment here. It's a great exercise. There's a way to do it. Just wanted to get into that. But probably the thing that excites me the most about today's topic is talking about squinges and squeds. So I love coming up with those kinds of terms. But if I was to explain that a bit further, I'd say, first of all, we want to train these basic movement patterns like squats and hinges, and use variations of squat or deadlift to maintain our functionality and, to some extent, you know, our strength, our ownership of position, our competency with generating movement. Therefore, we can become true movement smiths. But often the question that I'll get on these types of exercises is, well, How do I do it? Historically, what has been the way people do these things? And what are the variations? What's the best one for me? So I'm going to break those down independently. First of all, when you look at a squat. So a squat, you can think about it. It's going up and down. It's supposed to be, let's say, mostly vertical. And more so than anything, the squat is how we get our bodies up and down. Now that's, we can talk about loading in a moment here, but that's kind of how I view the squat. So in powerlifting, the squat that's utilized, usually it's a low bar back position, and it's very hingy. In other words, there's quite a bit of hip hinging in that because of the need to maintain very extended and compressed positions under heavy loads and accomplish the movement. And so there really is no variation or no option in competition. Now, in training, of course, there is for powerlifters. But say if you're into powerlifting, that's how you're going to squat. Now, over time, can that stiffen you up a little bit? Can it put undue stress, particularly on your hip joint and the superior acetabulum? Yes, absolutely, it can. But everyone makes their choices. So I don't really have a big judgment here. And I think that's fine to do from time to time for anyone if, they just want to explore that as an exercise. But in the long term, as a lifetime athlete, how can we best enhance performance, keep function natural, and practice joint preservation? Because as my famous professor always said, you never want to outlift your joints. I've already outlived one, so we won't talk about that right now. Not that I haven't before, just don't want to bore you. So, okay, so with our squat, I will generally discourage over the long term a person doing a squinge. And so a squinge is a hingy squat. We're not so much looking for that. And I kind of mentioned already, okay, we're taking powerlifters out of the picture and they can do, that technique because that's how they need to do it. You'll see in a person who maybe isn't trying to be a powerlifter, but they lack some amount of movement variability, difficulty in being expansive and getting that stack and all those things. And so they'll look like a powerlifter even when they're not trying to be. And their squat is very good morning-ish. And so, the good morning exercise is essentially where you have the barbell on your shoulders and you're hinging into preferably or potentially a horizontal torso, nice stiff flat back, and coming back up. So you're working on glutes and hamstrings and back. Well, a lot of times a squat, when a person, has some, movement issues, we'll see, an early elevation of the hips and they'll basically good morning out of their squat. So, you'll see this and we don't always immediately jump to these conclusions like, oh, that's a problem. It's something we've got to fix. But we may want to have consideration. Hey, is that working best for what you're trying to do? Is it causing you pain? Those are some thoughts. But for most of us, now finally getting to my point, this ramble-thon, we want to be a little more stacked. And so that's just that simple thing. We want to try to maintain a fairly cylindrical orientation between the rib cage, the diaphragm, the visceral contents, and the pelvis. It doesn't have to stay perfect, but again, that's a good reference versus the banana, which, isn't, what a banana looks like. I don't need to say anything. So this gets us into some interesting considerations. When you're trying to do these quote unquote squatty squats or more vertically oriented squats, I like to use the term piston. You're thinking of being very piston-like, or sometimes we'll think about a rocket. You're erupting or blasting off, taking up, coming up out of the hole. I mean, all those things are great cues to have, especially when you get it down to one word. But what I find is that you can say that and practice that and address movement restrictions and try to look at where we put the weight and all these things. Sometimes people will need a little help. And so one of the things that I like it's. I've been doing it for a long time. It's very popular. We're gonna use a heel elevation. So we're gonna use either a ramp or a board, and we're gonna take out some of the dorsiflexion demand that allows the body to be a little more vertical and stack or maintain that stack more easily. Another thing that is really good is front loading, and so usually I will front load in goblet style, so using a kettlebell or a dumbbell, you know, held under the chin or near there. That's really nice. You can also let that come away from the body or extend out a tad as you go down to create that counterbalance to help you with your alignment. Good stuff. You can also use a front rack position with a barbell if you have the mobility, and that's one of the great challenges. Front squats are awesome if you can do them properly, and to get that wrist and shoulder mobility in particular, and even upper thoracic spine, to be able to hold the bar safely, essentially across your anterior delts, it's really good. The problem is, I think for most of us, we just don't get quite there, and then the exercise becomes compromised. Now, in my own case, another story, you know, I spent several years working on being able to actually comfortably get a barbell there and execute a front squat. And just about the time I was getting very proficient, you know, I had an accident, blew out my shoulder, wound up with a lot of muscle atrophy and some steel and plastic, which is compromising me in two ways. I can't get to that position anymore. And when the bar is resting there, it's just not comfortable. So I don't know where I'm at with that. I may never do a front barbell squat again, but again, always and never try not to use that too much. We'll see what happens over time. I'm not too worried about it because there are other ways I can load the motion like that goblet style. But anyway, I like to have folks do that. Now let's take that squat a little bit further, and let's say, what if a person has a history of back issues, lumbar disc degeneration? It's been several decades ago, but I've had two lumbar disc herniations. And so, statistically, a lot of us have. Well, you have to be a little bit careful in how we try to restore movement variability in those cases. Because if you truly have some instability now in your spine that, you know, you just can't heal out of, and your spine doesn't have the integrity that it once has, you might still need to be a little bit hingy in your squat, because that extension is reflexive, but it's protective of that lumbar area. And of course, we'll get people that'll say, oh, well, you know, you just got to reorient yourself to not be apprehensive towards that motion and do a lot of Jefferson curls. Or, you know, Jefferson curls are when you're, let's say you're standing on a box preferably, and you've got a weight, barbell, dumbbells, and you're basically doing a rounded back deadlift, that into a deficit in many cases. Now, that exercise has everything, has a place potentially, but that puts a lot of tensile force and intradiscal pressure into any back. And if a back is no longer of the same integrity, just like you can make comparisons with a person who is ACL deficient, there are certain things that you don't do if they are not, let's say they haven't had a reconstruction or rehabbed, or they're not an effective coper per the literature. So again, we have to be careful. So I don't automatically assume that when I see something, I've got to fix it, but we want to learn more, so we make sure we make the right exercise selection or recommendation. Now, that stuff I just talked about probably pertains most to a full squat. And so full squatting, otherwise known as ATG squatting, that's ass to grass, or whatever surface you happen to be standing on. I like to recommend full squats mostly for mobility in a lifetime athlete, and not necessarily for maximum load. This is just my bias based on my experience, and that's, you know, practically 40 years of seeing people do these things and athletes at all levels. Now, why I say that is, you know, we do want to have full range of motion and access to full mobility in the squat, some amount of strength. But heavy loading in the depths, to me, it is sometimes a cause for concern or just a pause with some individuals, or perhaps even many. Now, where I go the other way, though, is I love a heavy load or moderately heavy load on a back squat, high bar position, whether that's a back squat, a hack squat, a Smith machine, for, let's say, a half squat or about, you know, 50% range of motion, 90 degree knee bend, that kind of thing, especially if we're looking at tempo changes and using some elastic or more powerful ascensions. That's fantastic. You can use a Kaiser machine. Those are great with the air pressure. But so again, neat ways that we can manipulate the squat. We can squat for mobility, and we can accept some load. Front loading is probably going to be better for most people to keep the alignment in the stack. We can back load, and actually that's a fairly athletic position when we drop into that position with the back load for power. So want to just say that's how I think about things as I'm designing programming for, you know, whether it's the training tribe or a team or an individual that I get the opportunity to work with. So now let's move along and talk about the deadlift. And where with the squat, I said, well, we don't want our squats to be too hingy. So I sort of suggested, let's take a look at the squinge when we see it. Now, if we combine a hybridized version of adding a bit of hinging, or let's say deadlift, let me back up. If we add a little bit of squatting or vertical nature to our deadlift, or hinge, put it that way, it's a squed. And so as opposed to a squinge, which is a hingy squat, a squed or squed lift is a squatty deadlift. And so I think I was a little more possibly confusing there in that presentation than I wanted to be, so please accept my apology. But here's where, if you're doing deadlifts, there are a couple different varieties. First of all, there's the traditional deadlift, which you can picture, say, anybody in the gym, a power lifter, a fitness enthusiast, a bodybuilder, an athlete. If you've got a straight bar, it's probably, as the weights get heavy, going to be on a platform with bumper plates. But you're going to use that traditional pattern where the hands are, you know, just outside the knees, feet are roughly shoulder width, maybe a tiny bit more, lifting from the ground up. And then you've got the sumo technique, which basically it's a wider stance, so you're a little bit wider, toed out, hands to the inside. Does shorten the bar path, works for some body geometries better than others. And then you've got the Romanian deadlift, which is essentially a more of a stiff leg deadlift that orients from the top down. And we're not generally lifting quite as heavy of a load with that one. All that said, if I think only about the traditional deadlift, here's where I want to go. And so there are less issues with doing, let's say, the basic powerlifting technique. When you have a straight bar, that's the technique that you're going to use. It works for most people as long as you keep the weight really reasonable. Let's say, you're just progressing it appropriately and using good training. You can eventually lift very heavy weight that way if you're so inclined. Here's the interesting thing, though. Hip depth is usually not a factor in this lift, because we're getting more hinging, so the hips are definitely going, you know, backwards and down, but theoretically they might be going more backwards than down, and they're really driving the motion, you know, with the rearward and then forward thrust of the hips as we're doing it. So form is king. Now, all that stated, you're still going to get greater lumbar loads, and this is all based on research and the various types, tensiometer studies and others, you're going to get greater lumbar loads, greater interdiscal pressures across the spinal tissues with that standard deadlift. But if you happen to use a trap bar, which is a hex bar, hexagonal bar, you know, you stand inside of it, it's got the hex, and then it's got low handles or high handles in most cases. You can also use dumbbells on blocks. You can use kettlebells. They can usually go from the floor because of the handle height. And then also, you can even use heavy bands if you have the really heavy ones. You can either stand on them or rig that up, you know, to get some load. Well, I like that type of exercise. That's why I call it a squed lift, because it is a deadlift, but it's a little squatty. And, you know, you have to get into this topic now, functional Functional. What's functional exercise? Well, a functional exercise is anything that enhances human function. So you can make one argument, say, oh, well, you know, doing the standard deadlift is functional. But when you watch most people who are going to pick things up, they'll use the squad lift. They don't have to be strict in the deadlift. They can be a little asymmetrical in their stance. They can get into a position where they can do a bit of squatting to help. And that's just the body self-organizing in a brilliant manner, human beast, to effectively generate more force at more safety. All these things are instinctively ingrained in us. That's our instinctive wisdom. So, you know, in summing up what I've been talking about here, I like to say, hey, if what you're doing is working and you're loving it, maybe you don't consider a change. But if you're like, oh, I'm interested in learning a little bit more about how these things work, I've had some issues in the past with this, consider exploring your squat. Can you make it a bit more squatty? Can you load it in the front to achieve fairly good form through full range and full depth? If you want to get more explosive, you can load it any way you want, but can you go through a partial range and particularly work on the ascension? Yeah, absolutely. Now, with the deadlift, do that as you are inclined as well. But if you get access to heavy dumbbells on blocks, heavy kettlebells, or a trap bar and some bumper plates, wow, that's awesome. Because now you can lift functionally, you can lift athletically, with a bit more safety, and that there is a statistic to support that. So those are my thoughts on this. It's, you know, it's a mailbag episode that kind of came from these great interactions that I get with these great lifetime athletes, so I really appreciate that. And if you're interested in taking it further, there are some resources available on thelifetimeathlete.com. You can hit the search bar, you know, using any number of keywords. You can also get some coaching services, a couple choices there, or join the training tribe. All of that's what I do, and it's there, and it's what I love. So thanks again, guys. Till next time, Coach Jay-Z signing out from the Lifetime Athlete Podcast.